Welcome to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Podcast.
I'm Lucia Kelly, expert at applied analysis, and I'm a survivor, Mr. Stoker, at any cost.
And I'm Talia Franks, media critic, fanfic enthusiast, and laughing on purpose at the darkness.
And we're here today to talk about Smith and Jones, the first episode of Series 3 of Doctor Who.
Smith and Jones aired on July 6, 2007. It was written by Russell T. Davies and directed by Charlie Palmer.
Reminder that time isn't a straight line. It can twist into any shape, and as such, this is a fully spoiled podcast. We might bring things in from later in the show, the comics, the books, the audio dramas, or even fan theories and articles.
With that out of the way, there's a plasmavore loose in the hospital, so let's get in the TARDIS. Content warning for slavery, police violence, and hospital death.
According to IMDb, when the hospital she works at is transported to the moon, medical student Martha Jones joins forces with the doctor to hunt down an alien fugitive before the oxygen runs out.
Our synopsis is that this is the one where the police don't give a fuck and Earth almost gets destroyed.
This is also the one where the doctor sends mixed signals and then gets mad at Martha because he's been sending mixed signals. But we'll get there.
Yeah. Also, I just love how the doctor is like, call me the doctor. And Martha's like, you have to earn that title.
I know.
And then at the end of the episode, he's like, welcome aboard, Miss Jones. And then she's like, glad to be here, Mr. Smith. She doesn't call him doctor. She says, Mr. Smith. She denies that title. She's like, Mr., not doctor.
Yeah, this is a great introduction to Martha. It's so good. I love that immediately we just get thrown into her whole like family drama. Like, oh my gosh, that family's a mess, poor Martha. And you immediately understand like her role within the family dynamic. Like, she's the mediator, she's the one that everyone goes to. And also it introduces her as like, okay, she's a problem solver and she knows people. That's cool. We're in for a good time. Unlike a previous blonde protagonist.
We're not here to talk about her. We're not here to talk about her. I do really love Martha. I love Martha so much.
So the slab, the poor slab gets fucking fried, which these slabs, before I get into that, these slabs, they're clearly sentient because this is also down to the choreography, but they move organically, they don't move automatically. And the way that the second slab dies by Jadoon is like clearly in pain. The first one doesn't really have a chance to react before he's irradiated. But like, so there's that whole business of like, these slabs are not just like pure leather. They're clearly sentient to some degree. And then the doctor refers to them as your basic slave drones. And then Martha says they were working for her, like her servants or something. And it's just like.
Also, can we just unpack the fact that he said they were pure leather all the way through and leather is made out of animal hide?
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the fetish line. No, yeah, yeah.
Yes, the fetish line is like, ew. But like, also, can we just talk about the Jadoon aesthetic? I feel like the Jadoon have a particular aesthetic.
They sure do. The Jadoon are interesting. So the doctor very specifically says that they're not actually police, that they're thugs for hire. But they're police, right?
Yeah, so this is where I find the portrayal of the Jadoon really interesting. because I'm thinking about how the Jadoon are portrayed here versus how the Jadoon are portrayed in future episodes in Doctor Who, and also how they're portrayed in the Sarah Jane Adventures, because I've just been rewatching the Sarah Jane Adventures, and I just rewatched Prisoner of the Jadoon, and Sarah Jane literally calls the Jadoon Galactic Police, who work for the Shadow Proclamation. And I find that episode really interesting because in this episode, the doctor says that they've taken the hospital to the moon because they have no jurisdiction on Earth. In the Sarah Jane Adventures episode, Prisoner of the Jadoon, there's a Jadoon who has crashed on Earth, who's going after a prisoner who is a shapeshifter and who literally goes in and possesses people's bodies, and at one point possesses Sarah Jane. And the Jadoon literally just go in full force to capture this prisoner on Earth with no regard for all the people on Earth that they are going to potentially hurt. Full force, like no consequences, like they think they have jurisdiction. And also in a future episode in Doctor Who, Fugitive the Jadoon, which is where the Fugitive Doctor shows up, my fave, Ruth Doctor, love her. The Jadoon also just stroll up onto Earth and they have full jurisdiction to go capture a prisoner. So I'm like, this whole Jadoon not having jurisdiction on Earth thing just gets fully ignored in other places on Doctor Who. It's totally a plot device.
Yeah. Maybe some legislation passed in the meantime.
Yeah, and I'm actually very annoyed that I didn't rewatch Fugitive the Jadoon, because I'm currently, I think I mentioned, doing a rewatch with my roommate, and Fugitive the Jadoon is literally the next episode that we're going to watch, but we haven't watched it yet. So I'm really annoyed that I haven't rewatched it, because then I could talk about this episode better.
Also, I do want to ask, because it's all I could think about, Talia. Is that how language works?
It's not how language works. And it's one of my most... Okay. It's both not how language works and potentially is how language works. So on the one hand, it's not how language works because you just can't translate like that. But on the other hand, in Doctor Who, there are translation circuits. I've just accepted that Doctor Who has translation circuits. And it is entirely possible that the way that the Jadoon do this is that they have a database where they contain all of the languages in the universe, just like the TARDIS does. And what they do is when they have this little speaker thing, they record someone talking. And when they record someone talking, it basically takes a sample, just like any one of our, like, Alexa, Siri. I can't say the G word because then the one I have in this room will activate. But any one of those will, if you trigger it and then say a sentence and say, "Hey, Alexa, translate ¿Dónde están mis pantalones?" Alexa will say, "¿Dónde están mis pantalones?" means, "Where are my pants?" If you say that, then that AI can translate it for you. So I'm saying the Jadoon have this database where they take the sample of the language, figure out what language it is, and then basically engage in a translation circuit where I'm guessing their suits can translate for them. So given the rules of Doctor Who and how translation works in Doctor Who, I can accept that their suits are translating for them and that they have, by taking the sample, designated that in this space they have to speak Earth English because that's what the database has told them they have to speak. I don't like it, but I will accept it.
I'm wondering if we should talk next about. Okay, so do we want to tackle Mr. Stoker being an asshole, and also all of Martha's, like, the two students that we get to know apart from Martha Morgenstern, and I believe her name starts with S. The one who the doctor is very rude to, is like, dismisses out of hand. Which, rude. Okay.
Yeah. The doctor is so rude in this episode.
Do we want to talk about that, or do we want to talk about the doctor sending mixed signals?
The doctor sends such mixed signals, and it's so upsetting to me in my spirit, because it's like, Martha can do so much better. She can do so much better. And then she ends up with Mickey, of all people. She can do so much better. Both of them, she's out of their league.
The doctor is in this really weird place where, like, he's very much in that, like, yeah, I'm totally over my ex, period. Where it's like flirting and being like, I'm so ready to be back into society again, when clearly they're not. Also, the little sneaky, we were together. No, you fucking weren't. That's the whole point. You guys never, like, talked about your bloody relationship. You were not together. You couldn't even say I love you. Don't come at me with this.
I mean, there's lots of different definitions of being together. Like, technically, they spent a lot of time together.
Yeah, but you know the way that he meant it. And they did not have that conversation.
I mean, lots of people are in relationships without having conversations. You don't have to be in a conversation with someone to be in a relationship with someone. Lots of people have relationships with bad communication. Trust me, I know.
I guess it's more that, like, it's weird. I'm feeling weird about it because Rose isn't there to, like, give her side of the story. I know she would say they were together as well, but, like, it's weird. I didn't like it. And then, so he's actively flirting with Martha. I don't care what he thinks he knows. He is actively flirting with her. And then is like, don't mistake this for anything other than me just doing you a favor. Like, I'm so done with this man. Get out of here. Do we need to call it Doc 2? Can't it just be Martha Jones and the TARDIS? She can just kidnap it. The TARDIS clearly likes her. Because if the TARDIS didn't like her, then the TARDIS would have taken the Doctor somewhere else when he was doing that little cheap trick. So she's got the TARDIS's stamp of approval.
Yeah. My phone background is a graphic that I made in Canva of the 13th Doctor, the Fugitive Doctor, Martha, Bill, and Yaz, because that's what I aspire to. I would love to see them all in a TARDIS together. I was thinking, and I know that this is totally off track, but I was thinking of that other medical student, Morgenstern, and how Morgenstern means morning star.
I know why you were thinking that too, but I won't out you.
I know you know why I was thinking that. But anyway, so then that was making me think of how, like, to give credit where credit was due, he was trying to be an ambassador to the Jadoon. He was trying to keep people calm. But also, I feel like he took a lot of credit where he did deserve credit. And when Martha and the doctor were really the ones who saved the day, and then that little bit where he was praising Saxon, aka the master, and I'm just, a lot of pieces being pulled together here. And I feel like the fact that he was named Morgenstern is not an accident.
He definitely, like, gives snaky vibes.
I don't know. I feel like whenever a character has the last name Morgenstern, it's not an accident.
I would honestly love to see him more. I feel like Morgenstern could have actually been a really interesting companion.
I'm sick of white man companions. Please, no. No more. No more. I've accepted Dan because he is on the Thasman train. Caveat, this is being recorded after Eve of the Daleks, before Sea Devils, before 13's final episode. That's all I've seen of Dan. I don't know what else he has done. Just for the record, I approve of Dan up to Eve of the Daleks. Just putting that out there. Just making that explicit. Sorry, I'm shouting a little bit. I apologize if that affected my audio quality. I was shouting into the microphone. Ooh, need to drink some water. Got a little passionate there.
So, this villain, I'm trying to figure out whether this is a strong or a weak episode. Because it feels like a real mix of stuff. I really like all the Martha stuff. About half of the science makes sense, which I appreciate. A lot of it feels very unexamined. Like, I wonder how much of this episode was written before Freema Agemon's cast. How much of it, like, and 2007 was a very different sort of cultural, there were different things in the zeitgeist in 2007 than there is right now. Rewatching this episode now feels really heavy in a way that I don't think it was meant to be.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, watching this episode now was so, so upsetting because, as you said, it's so unexamined. I was thinking especially the fact that it's set in a hospital and the fact that it's so unexamined just how many people would have died. Because if you think about that entire hospital, like, was wiped clean of oxygen. I was wondering for a second there why the doctor brought Martha out, like why he bothered. And then I thought about it and I'm like, the time it would take for oxygen to get back into that little room, like he had to bring her outside because he had to get her back to oxygen as soon as possible. So all the people who were trapped in the hospital wouldn't have gotten oxygen back because the amount of time it would take the oxygen to repopulate through the building. Everyone who was like deep into the hospital and didn't get outside as soon as possible would have suffocated.
Yeah. Also, it makes absolutely no bloody sense that the electricity is still on. Like, it just doesn't. What's it connected to? What about all the loose wires? The plumbing? I mean, there's just, that building would have started falling apart. It just doesn't.
I think it's implied that the plasma cores are what's keeping the building powered. That's what I assumed. But I don't know what plasma cores are. I don't know. But yeah, the fact that when the building was taken out, there was like that water flowing and like the whole, like when the building was like carved out, I was like, yeah, no, that makes no sense. And all the people who died when the hospital was first moved, like that room was entirely shaken up. People who were like connected to like fragile medical equipment would have died right away. Almost, not right away, but like very quickly, because they would have gotten shaken out of their beds. Anyone who was in the middle of surgery. Yeah, there are so many people dead. So many people dead. And like all those people who were like screaming, crying, upset. And like also that person who hit the Jadoon, who was clearly having a panic attack, some sort of mental breakdown, and then was just killed. Like, that was, felt very ableist to me. And it's just like, this whole episode was just so heavy and emotionally devastating. I felt crushed by it. And I don't know why it hit so hard and so heavily when I just rewatched it a few months ago. And I was like, this is, and it's so weird because I just rewatched it a few months ago and did not have all these heavy emotions associated with it. Like, it was literally like just last summer I rewatched it. And I guess last summer when I rewatched it, I was not looking at it this critically. I was just rewatching it to have fun. And so I wasn't looking at it with this critical eye, but looking at it with this critical eye. And I think also what it is that because it's so soon after my grandmother died, and she died like in a hospital, like she was sick, and just looking at it from that different lens just completely shifted how I see the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why rewatching shows, I think, is so valuable, because you draw different things out every time. I was also just really struck by, I was in this weird doublethink space where I was like, Martha's in no danger because the Jejun are aliens who don't have the social context for humanity that we do. They just think of us as all the same blobs. But they are coded as police because she's essentially harassed. The doctor deliberately, literally plants evidence on her, plants a big smooch, and leaves her to fend for herself.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't say that Martha's in no danger, because the Jejun are aliens who specifically don't care about humans. So I was going to say, it's kind of like how Black people and other people of color often aren't seen as humans, like aren't valued the same way that white people are. Jejun don't value humans as having worth. It's like that person who like hit the Jejun with the vase or whatever it was. Like, also, why was there a vase in a hospital?
But it takes me out every single time. What was this vase doing there?
Yeah, but anyway, but as soon as like a Jejun who is valued gets attacked, this human is just automatically worthless and just automatically gets shot and killed. Like, just immediately sentenced, like crime, assault, like sentence.
Plea in quotation marks.
Guilty. Yeah. Plea guilty, sentence, execution. Humans have no worth to Jejun. Their only mission is to capture this criminal. And they just don't care. When the MRI machine is about to go off, which we'll get there about how that doesn't make any sense, but they just don't care about the fact that the Earth is going to get destroyed. They just evacuate. Mm. They have their prisoner. They did their job. They're just going to go. Like, they could fix everything. When the doctor fixes things, all he has to do is unplug those two things. Literally, all he has to do is unplug those things. The Jejun could have walked over and unplugged it. That's all they had to do. And yet they didn't, because they didn't care, because they don't value humans. So that's exactly it, is they don't value them. So it's not saying that Martha's in no danger. It's that she is equally not valued along with all the white people.
Yeah.
So it's not that she is valued more. It's that the white people are valued less. I don't know who originally said this, something that I've seen in a lot of places, but a lot of dystopia and sci-fi in the future is just white people imagining what it would be like if they were treated like people of color.
Yeah, no, I've seen that one too. Yeah. Yeah. That MRI does not make sense. Okay, so Florence sets up the MRI machine. First of all, I find it delightful that the doctor is so committed to the bit. Like, he is committed. He's working it in. He's trying to work in as many lines as possible to convince Florence that he's human. And the way that he convinces her that he's human is by just being as oblivious and friendly as possible. And I find that delightful. That is delightful.
Commit to the bit, doctor. Commit to the bit.
Commit to the bit. I loved it.
Even how he works in the fact that he's not wearing shoes by explaining that he had bunions and they're gone, and that he was in the middle of getting surgery when the hospital crashed, and that's why he's not wearing shoes, and explaining that. Commit to the bit.
Commit to the bit. But so Florence is setting up the MRI machine. That's not how MRIs work. My sweet Russell T. No. So I did ask the person in the family who's actually into science. I am not. I am an art student feigning and blustering my way through the science rating. But I asked my actual science nerd sister, who happened to be in the room at the time, like, hey, does this make sense, this thing with the MRI? So it doesn't. People would die, though. So Florence says this wave will go out and everyone's brainstems will be fried. It's a magnetic resonance imaging machine. So that's not what would happen. What would happen, according to my sister, is first of all, an EMP would get thrown out. So about half the world's electricity grid would get thrown out of whack, which would cause a lot of deaths. But then everything magnetic would suddenly be moving very, very, very fast, all in one direction. So people would die, and it would be a lot of them, but it would not be by brainstem frying.
Yeah.
It's, ugh.
That's a little
gross. She then went into very explicit detail, which I will spare both you and the audience from, but I may be scarred for life.
I appreciate that.
The other science that just does not bloody make the radiation thing. Okay. No, I refuse. It's not only is that not how radiation works. For both the radiation and the MRI, if it's at that level of power, that little room is going to do nothing for you. It's going to do nothing for you. You are not safe inside that little room. If it's going to radiate through like half the earth, the plexiglass will not save you.
Yeah, the plexiglass didn't save her from the Jadoon. Although I did like how she said, burn with me, burn in hell.
That line was too intense for what was happening in the rest of the episode. I feel like Florence was on her own little journey that we went privy to.
Also, can we talk about how sharp that straw was? Like, it looked like a plastic straw, but it's got to be metal.
Or something.
It's got to be made out of some alien, like... some alien, like, very strong thing.
Also, when she pokes 10, I always flinch. I don't like it.
Yeah. Also, does his blood taste different?
I would assume than human so. Blood? Surely. Maybe she's just too full. Because she's just drunk Stoker. Which, by the way, I do love the fact that this is about an alien vampire and that the teacher is called Stoker.
I told you, all names are intentional. There's no way. There's no way. Also, the fact that this episode is called Smith and Jones, like, we were talking before we started recording, that sounds like a shell company for the mafia.
It sure does. Like, Mr. Smith can turn up and Miss Jones can turn up, but not together. That's not real.
Yeah. I'm entirely certain that they named her Martha Jones just for this joke of this episode. Like, her last name is Jones just so that they could call this episode Smith and Jones.
Yeah.
Everyone's name is intentional. there's no way. When you're writing, every name is intentional. Every name has a reason. And like, even when someone has a random name that supposedly doesn't have a reason, eventually, if you're writing about them for long enough, their name will get worked in. Something about their name will get worked into the plot of the show.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we go into favorite moments and least favorite moments?
Let's just go to favorite moments and least favorite moments.
Okay, favorite and least favorite moments. Talia, what was your, we'll end on a high, what was your least favorite moment?
My least favorite moment, I have two, both have to do with Stoker. So Stoker was an asshole. One of them is that whole scene where Stoker was criticizing Martha and all the other medical students because he was just being an ass. The second moment is when he's about to die and he says, like, my daughter's still in university. I'm never going to see her again. Not because I felt bad for him, but because I felt bad for his daughter, because she's never going to see her dad again. And I just felt really devastated for her. Because I'm like, I don't know whether or not she had a good relationship with her dad, but like, losing a parent, I feel like, is always hard. Whether or not you get along with relatives, I feel like it's, I don't know.
I'm going to choose not to be an ass.
You can feel whatever you want to feel. I'm saying that I'm saying that I personally have had relatives that I don't particularly care for pass away. And it's still been devastating for me. Like, it's awful. Like, when my grandmother died, I am still feeling very devastated about that, obviously. Like, it's especially bad when you really care about someone, but even when it's like someone that you don't care about or don't like, at least, or not you, but even for me, when it's someone who I don't have a particularly close relationship with or don't particularly care for, it still hurts, particularly never getting the chance to reconcile. I don't know. I'm just very in my feels about it.
My least favorite moment is going to sound really trivial. Next to that, it's the moment when all the extras are screaming about being left on the moon. It's so badly directed. It takes me out every time. It's not done well. It's meant to be this huge, devastating moment. And every time, all I can think about is how tired everyone was on that day. Like, you can feel it in the way they're performing. This is like take 10. It's so overdone. It doesn't feel real. I hate it. It's the worst bit for me. It might even mean that we're docking the acting grade. Possibly. Yeah. Like, it's just, it takes me so far out. It's so bad.
Yeah, it's not good, especially because it is devastating. Because, like I said, everyone on that, in that hospital suffocated and died. Mm. Like, no, I'm just saying, like, it took way too long to oxygenate that hospital back. Like, they're right to be upset because they're all going to die. They're all going to die. Martha survived. Morgan Stern survived. A few of the people that were close enough to the doors to get back out. And like, the people who were connected to the oxygen, I think they might have lived. But like, most of the people in that hospital suffocated or got killed when they got disconnected from their machines.
Favorite moments. What was your favorite moment?
Wait, sorry, hold on. Another least favorite moment is when Ten says that Martha isn't replacing Rose. And Martha says that she only goes for humans because that's speciesist. And she's also pushed into it because Ten is being an ass.
He's being such an ass.
Because the thing is that Martha isn't actually like anti interspecies relations, but she's being forced into saying something that is honestly pretty bigoted because Ten is being an asshole.
That whole ending scene, I feel really icky about. From the minute like it starts at the party, I feel icky about it. Because that entire scene is set up for the Doctor to be Martha's savior. Like, that whole scene is set up from the very beginning. We are framing Martha's family as something that Martha wants to escape. And here's the Doctor with his shiny TARDIS who is offering her that.
Yeah.
Ugh. My favorite moment, I think, is... Yeah, I'm going to say it. It's the Doctor doing human improv. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah. I'm going to say that's my favorite moment and the only thing I like about this episode. Oh, wait, no. And also, like, the one thing I like about the ending is when he said time travel along your own timeline is strictly prohibited except for Cheap Tricks.
No, I hate that line. I hate it so much because it means what that actually means. What it actually means is that there is no rule, right? What that line actually means is that it's a completely self-inflicted rule and that there's no actual real-world consequences. Or there are, but they're negligible. So that he could actually cross his own timeline at any point. It's just the honor system or whatever. Like, it's just a traditional Time Lord rule, but he can absolutely do it.
See, that's why I like it, is because it... So I know that this is weird logic, but I like that it's a weird way of us seeing that, like, of us getting a peek into the fact that the Doctor is a little bit the bad guy. And I like getting a little sneak peek at that.
Please say more. What do you mean?
The Doctor is entirely capable of crossing their own timeline and entirely capable of going back and making these changes and just chooses not to. And so I really like seeing that. And I wish that we could see more of that. And I wish that we could unpack that more. But I don't know. I just really like seeing scenes where we can get a glimpse of how the Doctor, about how the Doctor doesn't hold themselves accountable and doesn't do the right thing and doesn't follow their own rules. And I just really like seeing that.
Yeah. I totally understand why it's a rule. It's a really important rule to have, because if you're not being really careful and responsible about it, you could get in some pretty messy time loops, and time isn't something to be messed with. That's a good rule to have.
I really want you to watch Before the Flood and Under the Lake. I forget which one comes first. I don't know if it's Under the Lake and Before the Flood or Before the Flood and Under the Lake, but those are two of my favorite 12 episodes. They're so good. Seriously, just watch 12. Please just watch 12. He's so good. He's so good.
What was your favorite moment, Talia?
I just told you.
Didn't you?
Yeah, I told you, it's the Doctor pretending to be human, because it's the only good part of the episode.
Right, yeah, of course, sorry.
I'm so sorry, Skye. Okay, spoiler alert, we have a guest on our next episode. It's Skye from the Queer Archive. I'm so excited. And this is their favorite episode of Martha's season, and we just ragged on it the whole time.
Sorry,
Skye. Sorry,
Skye. I'm sure you're going to have marvelous things to say about the Shakespeare game. The Hero and the Atom.
Martha Hero. Adam Doctor, yeah.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah, I feel like that's going to be the Hero and the Atom for the most of series 3.
I feel like this is going to be a pattern. I feel like this is going to be a repeated pattern going forward. I can see clearly now. I can see clearly before us. It's gonna continue.
The path laid out.
Path laid before.
All right. Grading. Production. I'm leaning towards a 3 or a 4.
3?
The CGI is something. They're also like weird, really odd direction choices. Just really odd ones. There's the cutting and the editing is a bit strange, particularly early on.
I'm distressed by the straw still. I don't...
Also, making the electric shocks visible was a choice.
Yeah, it was definitely a choice.
So yeah, probably a 3.
Writing?
3 again.
Acting?
Do we dock a point for that terrible extra scene?
I think we do.
I think we do. Oh.
Science?
2.
Rewatchability. Before I rewatched it, right? I would have given it a 4. So, now I want to give it a 2.
Shall we compromise and say 3?
Yes, let's give it a 3. Yeah. And now that is
15 out of 25, which is
60? That's 60.
Oof.
That is an F. No, that's a D minus.
D minus. Close call though. How does this happen? Oof. Well, I'm excited to see more Martha.
I am excited to see more Martha.
I'm really excited.
I'm hopeful the next episode will get more because I rewatched the next episode pretty frequently. I like the Shakespeare Code.
I'm also really looking forward to rewatching 42.
I love 42.
42 is great and I think severely underrated, and I'm excited. All right. That was Smith and Jones. We hope you had a lovely time.
For the general public, we will be back with Sky from Queer Archive for the Shakespeare Code. For patrons, we will be back with a special episode covering Infinite Quest.
Yes, we have a Patreon now, and I'm so excited to talk about it.
Yeah, so you can find us at patreon.com/wibblypod. Be there, be square. We have all sorts of fun things, so come be a wobbler. Is that what we decided on? A wibbler? A wobbler? A timey-wimer? We'll workshop it.
We'll workshop it. Maybe the audience can choose if they are a wibbler or a wobbler.
Are you a wibbler or wobbler? We'll make a poll.
See you next time.
Hello and welcome to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey Podcast.
I'm Lisha Kelly, expert at applied analysis, and I'm a survivor, Mr. Stoker, at any cost.
And I'm Talia Franks, media critic, fanfic enthusiast, and laughing on purpose at the darkness.
And we're here today to talk about Smith and Jones, the first episode of Series 3 of Doctor Who.
Smith and Jones aired on July 6, 2007. It was written by Russell T. Davies and directed by Charlie Palmer.
Reminder that time isn't a straight line. It can twist into any shape, and as such, this is a fully spoiled podcast. We might bring things in from later in the show, the comics, the books, the audio dramas, or even fan theories and articles.
With that out of the way, there's a plasmavore loose in the hospital, so let's get in the TARDIS. Content warning for slavery, police violence, and hospital death.
According to IMDb, when the hospital she works at is transported to the moon, Medical student Martha Jones joins forces with the doctor to hunt down an alien fugitive before the oxygen runs out.
Our synopsis is that this is the one where the police don't give a fuck and Earth almost gets destroyed.
This is also the one where the doctor sends mixed signals and then gets mad at Martha because he's been sending mixed signals. But we'll get there.
Yeah. Also, I just love how the doctor is like, call me the doctor. And Martha's like, you have to earn that title.
I know.
And then at the end of the episode, he's like, welcome aboard, Miss Jones. And then she's like, glad to be here, Mr. Smith. She doesn't call him doctor. She says, Mr. Smith. She denies that title. She's like, Mr., not doctor.
Yeah, this is a great introduction to Martha. It's so good. I love that immediately we just get thrown into her whole like family drama. Like, oh my gosh, that family's a mess. Poor Martha. And you immediately understand like her role within the family dynamic. Like she's the mediator. She's the one that everyone goes to. And also it introduces her as like, okay, she's a problem solver and she knows people. That's cool. We're in for a good time. Unlike a previous blonde protagonist.
We're not here to talk about her. We're not here to talk about her. I do really love Martha. I love Martha so much.
So the slab, the poor slab gets fucking fried, which these slabs, before I get into that, these slabs, they're clearly sentient because this is also down to the choreography, but they move organically. They don't move automatically. And the way that the second slab dies by Jadoon is like clearly in pain. The first one doesn't really have a chance to react before he's irradiated. But like, so there's that whole business of like, these slabs are not just like pure leather. They're clearly sentient to some degree. And then the doctor refers to them as your basic slave drones. And then Martha says they were working for her, like her servants or something. And it's just like,
also, can we just unpack the fact that he said they were pure leather all the way through and leather is made out of animal hide?
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the fetish line. No, yeah, yeah.
Yes, the fetish line is like, ew. But like, also, can we just talk about the Jadoon aesthetic? I feel like the Jadoon have a particular aesthetic.
They sure do. The Jadoon are interesting. So the doctor very specifically says that they're not actually police, that they're thugs for hire. But they're police, right?
Yeah, so this is where I find the portrayal of the Jadoon really interesting, because I'm thinking about how the Jadoon are portrayed here versus how the Jadoon are portrayed in future episodes in Doctor Who, and also how they're portrayed in the Sarah Jane Adventures, because I've just been rewatching the Sarah Jane Adventures, and I just rewatched Prisoner of the Jadoon, and Sarah Jane literally calls the Jadoon Galactic Police, who worked for the Shadow Proclamation. And I find that episode really interesting, because in this episode, the doctor says that they've taken the hospital to the moon because they have no jurisdiction on Earth. In the Sarah Jane Adventures episode, Prisoner of the Jadoon, there's a Jadoon who has crashed on Earth, who's going after a prisoner, who is a shapeshifter, and who literally goes in and possesses people's bodies, and at one point possesses Sarah Jane. And the Jadoon literally just go in full force to capture this prisoner on Earth with no regard for all the people on Earth that they are going to potentially hurt. Full force, like, no consequences, like, they think they have jurisdiction. And also, in a future episode in Doctor Who, Fugitive the Jadoon, which is where the Fugitive Doctor shows up, my fave, Ruth Doctor, love her. The Jadoon also just stroll up onto Earth and they have full jurisdiction to go capture a prisoner. So I'm like, this whole Jadoon not having jurisdiction on Earth thing just gets fully ignored in other places on Doctor Who. It's totally a plot device.
Yeah. Maybe some legislation passed in the meantime.
Yeah, and I'm actually very annoyed that I didn't rewatch Fugitive the Jadoon, because I'm currently, I think I mentioned, doing a rewatch with my roommate, and Fugitive the Jadoon is literally the next episode that we're going to watch, but we haven't watched it yet. So I'm really annoyed that I haven't rewatched it, because then I could talk about this episode better.
Also, I do want to ask, because it's all I could think about, Talia. Is that how language works?
It's not how language works. And it's one of my most... Okay. It's both not how language works and potentially is how language works. So, on the one hand, it's not how language works because you just can't translate like that. But on the other hand, in Doctor Who, there are translation circuits. I've just accepted that Doctor Who has translation circuits. And it is entirely possible that the way that the Jadoon do this is that they have a database where they contain all of the languages in the universe, just like the TARDIS does. And what they do is when they have this little speaker thing, they record someone talking. And when they record someone talking, it basically takes a sample, just like any one of our, like, Alexa, Siri. I can't say the G word because then the one I have in this room will activate. But any one of those will, if you trigger it and then say a sentence and say, hey, Alexa, translate, ¿dónde están mis pantalones? Alexa will say, ¿dónde están mis pantalones? Means, where are my pants? If you say that, then that AI can translate it for you. So I'm saying the Jadoon have this database where they take the sample of the language, figure out what language it is, and then basically engage in a translation circuit where I'm guessing their suits can translate for them. So given the rules of Doctor Who and how translation works in Doctor Who, I can accept that their suits are translating for them and that they have, by taking the sample, designated that in this space, they have to speak Earth English because that's what the database has told them they have to speak. I don't like it, but I will accept it.
I'm wondering if we should talk next about... Okay, so do we want to tackle Mr. Stoker being an asshole, and also all of Martha's, like, the two students that we get to know apart from Martha Morgenstern, and I believe her name starts with S, the one who the Doctor is very rude to, is like, dismisses out of hand, which, rude, okay.
Yeah, the Doctor is so rude in this episode.
Do we want to talk about that, or do we want to talk about the Doctor sending mixed signals?
The Doctor sends such mixed signals, and it's so upsetting to me in my spirit, because it's like, Martha can do so much better. She can do so much better. And then she ends up with Mickey, of all people. She can do so much better. Both of them, she's out of their league.
The Doctor is in this really weird place where, like, he's very much in that, like, yeah, I'm totally over my ex, period. Where it's like, flirting and being like, I'm so ready to be back into society again, when clearly they're not. Also, the little sneaky, we were together. No, you fucking weren't. That's the whole point. You guys never, like, talked about your bloody relationship. You were not together. You couldn't even say I love you. Don't come at me with this.
It's ridiculous. I mean, there's lots of different definitions of being together. Like, technically, they spent a lot of time together.
Yeah, but you know the way that he meant it. And they did not have that conversation.
I mean, lots of people are in relationships without having conversations. You don't have to be in a conversation with someone to be in a relationship with someone. Lots of people have relationships with bad communication. Trust me, I know.
I guess it's more that, like, it's weird. I'm feeling weird about it because Rose isn't there to, like, give her side of the story. I know she would say they were together as well, but, like, it's weird. I didn't like it. And then, so he's actively flirting with Martha. I don't care what he thinks he knows. He is actively flirting with her. And then is like, don't mistake this for anything other than me just doing you a favor. Like, I'm so done with this man. Get out of here. Do we need to call it Doc 2? Can't it just be Martha Jones and the TARDIS? She can just kidnap it. The TARDIS clearly likes her. Because if the TARDIS didn't like her, then the TARDIS would have taken the Doctor somewhere else when he was doing that little cheap trick. So she's got the TARDIS's stamp of approval.
Yeah. My phone background is a graphic that I made in Canva of the 13th Doctor, the Fugitive Doctor, Martha, Bill, and Yaz, because that's what I aspire to. I would love to see them all in a TARDIS together. I was thinking, and I know that this is totally off track, but I was thinking of that other medical student, Morgenstern, and how Morgenstern means morning star.
And I know why you were thinking that too, but I won't out you.
I know you know why I was thinking that. But anyway, so then that was making me think of how, like, to give credit where credit was due, he was trying to be an ambassador to the Jadoon. He was trying to keep people calm. But also, I feel like he took a lot of credit where he did deserve credit. And when Martha and the Doctor were really the ones who saved the day, and then that little bit where he was praising Saxon, aka the Master, and I'm just, a lot of pieces being pulled together here. And I feel like the fact that he was named Morgenstern is not an accident.
He definitely, like, gives snaky vibes.
I don't know. I feel like whenever a character has the last name Morgenstern, it's not an accident.
I would honestly love to see him more. I feel like Morgenstern could have actually been a really interesting companion.
I'm sick of white man companions. Please, no. No more. No more. I've accepted Dan because he is on the Thasmin train. Caveat, this is being recorded after Eve of the Daleks, before Sea Devils, before 13's final episode. That's all I've seen of Dan. I don't know what else he has done. Just for the record, I approve of Dan up to Eve of the Daleks. Just putting that out there. Just making that explicit. Sorry, I'm shouting a little bit. I apologize if that affected my audio quality. I was shouting into the microphone. Ooh, need to drink some water. Got a little passionate there.
So, this villain, I'm trying to figure out whether this is a strong or a weak episode. because it feels like a real mix of stuff. I really like all the Martha stuff. About half of the science makes sense, which I appreciate. A lot of it feels very unexamined. Like, I wonder how much of this episode was written before Freema Agemon's cast. How much of it, like, and 2007 was a very different sort of cultural, there were different things in the zeitgeist in 2007 than there is right now. Rewatching this episode now feels really heavy in a way that I don't think it was meant to be.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, watching this episode now was so, so upsetting because, as you said, it's so unexamined. I was thinking especially the fact that it's set in a hospital and the fact that it's so unexamined, just how many people would have died. Because if you think about that entire hospital, like, was wiped clean of oxygen. I was wondering for a second there why the doctor brought Martha out, like why he bothered. And then I thought about it and I'm like, the time it would take for oxygen to get back into that little room, like he had to bring her outside because he had to get her back to oxygen as soon as possible. So all the people who were trapped in the hospital wouldn't have gotten oxygen back because the amount of time it would take the oxygen to repopulate through the building. Everyone who was like deep into the hospital and didn't get outside as soon as possible would have suffocated.
Yeah. Also, it makes absolutely no bloody sense that the electricity is still on. Like, it just doesn't. What's it connected to? What about all the loose wires? The plumbing? I mean, there's just, that building would have started falling apart. It just doesn't.
I think it's implied that the plasma cores are what's keeping the building powered. That's what I assumed, but I don't know what plasma cores are. I don't know. But yeah, the fact that when the building was taken out, there was like that water flowing and like the whole, like when the building was like carved out, I was like, yeah, no, that makes no sense. And all the people who died when the hospital was first moved, like that room was entirely shaken up. People who were like connected to like fragile medical equipment would have died right away, almost. Not right away, but like very quickly, because they would have gotten shaken out of their beds. Anyone who was in the middle of surgery. Yeah, there are so many people dead. So, so many people dead. And like all those people who were like screaming, crying, upset. And like also that person who hit the Jadoon, who was clearly having a panic attack, some sort of mental breakdown, and then was just killed. Like that was, felt very ableist to me. And it's just like, this whole episode was just so heavy and emotionally devastating. I felt crushed by it. And I don't know why it hit so hard and so heavily when I just rewatched it a few months ago. And I was like, this is, and it's so weird because I just rewatched it a few months ago and did not have all these heavy emotions associated with it. Like it was literally like just last summer I rewatched it. And I guess last summer when I rewatched it, I was not looking at it this critically. I was just rewatching it to have fun. And so I wasn't looking at it with this critical eye, but looking at it with this critical eye. And I think also what it is that because it's so soon after my grandmother died and she died like in a hospital, like she was sick, and just looking at it from that different lens just completely shifted how I see the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why rewatching shows, I think, is so valuable, because you draw different things out every time. I was also just really struck by, I was in this weird double think space where I was like, Martha's in no danger because the Jejun are aliens who don't have the social context for humanity that we do. They just think of us as all the same blobs. But they are coded as police because she's essentially harassed. The doctor deliberately, literally plants evidence on her, plants a big smooch, and leaves her to fend for herself.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't say that Martha's in no danger because the Jejun are aliens who specifically don't care about humans. So I was going to say, it's kind of like how Black people and other people of color often aren't seen as humans, like aren't valued the same way that white people are. Jejun don't value humans as having worth. It's like that person who like hit the Jejun with the vase or whatever it was. Like, also, why was there a vase in a hospital?
But it takes me out every single time. What was this vase doing there?
Yeah, but anyway, but as soon as like a Jejun who is valued gets attacked, this human is just automatically worthless and just automatically gets shot and killed. Like, just immediately sentenced, like crime, assault, like sentence.
Plea in quotation marks. Guilty. Yeah.
Plea guilty, sentence, execution. Humans have no worth to Jejun. Their only mission is to capture this criminal. And they just don't care. When the MRI machine is about to go off, which we'll get there about how that doesn't make any sense, but they just don't care about the fact that the Earth is going to get destroyed. They just evacuate. Mm. They have their prisoner. They did their job. They're just going to go. Like, they could fix everything. When the doctor fixes things, all he has to do is unplug those two things. Literally, all he has to do is unplug those things. The Jejun could have walked over and unplugged it. That's all they had to do. And yet they didn't, because they didn't care, because they don't value humans. So that's exactly it, is they don't value them. So it's not saying that Martha's in no danger. It's that she is equally not valued along with all the white people.
Yeah.
So it's not that she is valued more. It's that the white people are valued less. I don't know who originally said this, something that I've seen in a lot of places, but a lot of dystopia and sci-fi in the future is just white people imagining what it would be like if they were treated like people of color.
Yeah, no, I've seen that one too. Yeah. Yeah. That MRI does not make sense. Okay, so Florence sets up the MRI machine. First of all, I find it delightful that the doctor is so committed to the bit. Like, he is committed. He's working it in. He's trying to work in as many lines as possible to convince Florence that he's human. And the way that he convinces her that he's human is by just being as oblivious and friendly as possible. And I find that delightful. That is delightful.
Commit to the bit, doctor. Commit to the bit.
Commit to the bit. I loved it.
Even how he works in the fact that he's not wearing shoes by explaining that he had bunions and they're gone, and that he was in the middle of getting surgery when the hospital crashed, and that's why he's not wearing shoes, and explaining that. Commit to the bit.
Commit to the bit. But so Florence is setting up the MRI machine. That's not how MRIs work. My sweet Russell T. No. So I did ask the person in the family who's actually into science. I am not. I am an art student feigning and blustering my way through the science rating. But I asked my actual science nerd sister, who happened to be in the room at the time, like, hey, does this make sense, this thing with the MRI? So it doesn't. People would die, though. So Florence says this wave will go out and everyone's brainstems will be fried. It's a magnetic resonance imaging machine. So that's not what would happen. What would happen, according to my sister, is first of all, an EMP would get thrown out. So about half the world's electricity grid would get thrown out of whack, which would cause a lot of deaths. But then everything magnetic would suddenly be moving very, very, very fast, all in one direction. So people would die, and it would be a lot of them, but it would not be by brainstem frying.
Yeah.
It's, ugh.
That's a little
gross. She then went into very explicit detail, which I will spare both you and the audience from, but I may be scarred for life.
I appreciate that.
The other science that just does not bloody make the radiation thing. Okay. No, I refuse. It's not only is that not how radiation works. For both the radiation and the MRI, if it's at that level of power, that little room is going to do nothing for you. It's going to do nothing for you. You are not safe inside that little room. If it's going to radiate through like half the earth, the plexiglass will not save you.
Yeah, the plexiglass didn't save her from the Jadoon. Although I did like how she said, burn with me, burn in hell.
That line was too intense for what was happening in the rest of the episode. I feel like Florence was on her own little journey that we went privy to.
Also, can we talk about how sharp that straw was? Like, it looked like a plastic straw, but it's got to be metal.
Or something.
It's got to be made out of some alien, very strong thing.
Also, when she pokes 10, I always flinch. I don't like it.
Yeah. Also, does his blood taste different?
I would assume than human so. Blood? Surely. Maybe she's just too full. Because she's just drunk Stoker. Which, by the way, I do love the fact that this is about an alien vampire and that the teacher is called Stoker.
I told you, all names are intentional. There's no way. There's no way. Also, the fact that this episode is called Smith and Jones, like we were talking before we started recording, that sounds like a shell company for the mafia.
It sure does. Like Mr. Smith can turn up and Miss Jones can turn up, but not together. That's not real.
Yeah. I'm entirely certain that they named her Martha Jones just for this joke of this episode. Like, her last name is Jones just so that they could call this episode Smith and Jones.
Yeah.
Everyone's name is intentional. There's no way. When you're writing, every name is intentional. Every name has a reason. And like, even when someone has a random name that supposedly doesn't have a reason, eventually, if you're writing about them for long enough, their name will get worked in. Something about their name will get worked into the plot of the show.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we go into favorite moments and least favorite moments?
Let's just go to favorite moments and least favorite moments.
Okay, favorite and least favorite moments. Talia, what was your, we'll end on a high, what was your least favorite moment?
My least favorite moment, I have two, both have to do with Stoker. So Stoker was an asshole. One of them is that whole scene where Stoker was criticizing Martha and all the other medical students because he was just being an ass. The second moment is when he's about to die. And he says, like, my daughter's still in university. I'm never going to see her again. Not because I felt bad for him, but because I felt bad for his daughter, because she's never going to see her dad again. And I just felt really devastated for her. Because I'm like, I don't know whether or not she had a good relationship with her dad, but like losing a parent, I feel like is always hard. Whether or not you get along with relatives, I feel like it's, I don't know.
I'm going to choose not to be an ass.
You can feel whatever you want to feel. I'm saying that I'm saying that I personally have had relatives that I don't particularly care for pass away. And it's still been devastating for me. Like, it's awful. Like, when my grandmother died, I am still feeling very devastated about that, obviously. Like, it's especially bad when you really care about someone. But even when it's like someone that you don't care about or don't like, at least, or not you, but even for me, when it's someone who I don't have a particularly close relationship with or don't particularly care for, it still hurts, particularly never getting the chance to reconcile. I don't know. I'm just very in my feels about it.
My least favorite moment is going to sound really trivial. Next to that, it's the moment when all the extras are screaming about being left on the moon. It's so badly directed. It takes me out every time. It's not done well. It's meant to be this huge, devastating moment. And every time, all I can think about is how tired everyone was on that day. Like, you can feel it in the way they're performing. This is like take 10. It's so overdone. It doesn't feel real. I hate it. It's the worst bit for me. It might even mean that we're docking the acting grade. Possibly. Yeah. Like, it's just, it takes me so far out. It's so bad.
Yeah, it's not good. Especially because it is devastating. Because like I said, everyone on that in that hospital suffocated and died. Mm. Like, no, I'm just saying, like, it took way too long to oxygenate that hospital back. Like, they're right to be upset because they're all going to die. They're all going to die. Martha survived. Morgan Stern survived. A few of the people that were close enough to the doors to get back out. And, like, the people who were connected to the oxygen, I think they might have lived. But, like, most of the people in that hospital suffocated or got killed when they got disconnected from their machines.
Favorite moments. What was your favorite?
Wait, sorry, hold on. Another least favorite moment is when Ten says that Martha isn't replacing Rose. And Martha says that she only goes for humans because that's speciesist. And she's also pushed into it because Ten is being an ass.
He's being such an ass.
Because the thing is that Martha isn't actually like anti-interspecies relations, but she's being forced into saying something that is honestly pretty bigoted because Ten is being an asshole.
That whole ending scene, I feel really icky about. From the minute like it starts at the party, I feel icky about it. Because that entire scene is set up for the doctor to be Martha's savior. Like, that whole scene is set up from the very beginning. We are framing Martha's family as something that Martha wants to escape. And here's the doctor with his shiny TARDIS who is offering her that.
Yeah.
Ugh. My favorite moment, I think, is, I'm going to say it. It's the doctor doing human improv. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah. I'm going to say That's my favorite moment and the only thing I like about this episode. Oh, wait, no. And also, like, the one thing I like about the ending is when he said time travel along your own timeline is strictly prohibited except for Cheap Tricks.
No, I hate that line. I hate it so much because it means what that actually means. What it actually means is that there is no rule, right? What that line actually means is that it's a completely self-inflicted rule and that there's no actual real-world consequences. Or there are, but they're negligible. So that he could actually cross his own timeline at any point. It's just the honor system or whatever. Like, it's just a traditional Time Lord rule, but he can absolutely do it.
See, that's why I like it, is because it... So I know that this is weird logic, but I like that it's a weird way of us seeing that, like, of us getting a peek into the fact that the Doctor is a little bit the bad guy. And I like getting a little sneak peek at that.
Please say more. What do you mean?
The Doctor is entirely capable of crossing their own timeline and entirely capable of going back and making these changes and just chooses not to. And so I really like seeing that, and I wish that we could see more of that, and I wish that we could unpack that more. But I don't know, I just really like seeing scenes where we can get a glimpse of how the Doctor, about how the Doctor doesn't hold themselves accountable and doesn't do the right thing and doesn't follow their own rules. And I just really like seeing that.
I totally understand why it's a rule. It's a really important rule to have, because if you're not being really careful and responsible about it, you could get in some pretty messy time loops, and time isn't something to be messed with. That's a good rule to have.
I really, really want you to watch Before the Flood and Under the Lake. I forget which one comes first. I don't know if it's Under the Lake and Before the Flood or Before the Flood and Under the Lake. But those are two of my favorite 12 episodes. They're so good. Seriously, just watch 12. Please just watch 12. He's so good. He's so good.
What was your favorite moment, Talia?
I just told you. It's...
Didn't you?
Yeah, oh. I told you. It's the Doctor pretending to be human, because it's the only good part of the episode.
Right, yeah, of course. Sorry.
I'm so sorry, Skye. Okay, spoiler alert, we have a guest on our next episode. It's Skye from the Queer Archive. I'm so excited. And this is their favorite episode of Martha season, and we just ragged on it the whole time.
Sorry,
Skye. Sorry,
Skye. I'm sure you're gonna have marvelous things to say about the Shakespeare code. The Hero and the Atom.
Martha Hero. Atom Doctor, yeah.
Very straightforward. Yeah, I feel like that's going to be the Hero of the Atom for the most of series 3.
I feel like this is going to be a pattern. I feel like this is going to be a repeated pattern going forward. Mm-hmm. I can see clearly now. I can see clearly before us. It's going to continue.
The path laid out.
Path laid before.
All right. Grading. Production. I'm leaning towards a 3 or a 4.
3?
The CGI is something. They're also like weird, really odd direction choices. Just really odd ones. There's the cutting and the editing is a bit strange, particularly early on.
I'm distressed by the straw still.
Also, making the electric shocks visible was a choice.
Yeah, it was definitely a choice.
So yeah, probably a 3.
Writing?
3 again.
Acting?
Do we dock a point for that terrible extra scene?
I think we do.
I think we do. Oh.
Science?
2.
Rewatchability. Before I rewatched it, right? I would have given it a 4. So, now I want to give it a 2.
Shall we compromise and say 3?
Yes, let's give it a 3. And yeah. Now that is
15 out of 25, which is
60. That's 60.
Oof.
That is an F. No, that's a D-.
D-. Close call, though. How does this happen? Oof. Well, I'm excited to see more Martha.
I am excited to see more Martha.
I'm really excited.
I'm hopeful the next episode will get more, because I rewatched the next episode pretty frequently. I like the Shakespeare Code.
I'm also really looking forward to rewatching 42.
I love 42.
42 is great, and I think severely underrated, and I'm excited. All right. That was Smith and Jones. We hope you had a lovely time.
For the general public, we will be back with Sky from Queer Archive for the Shakespeare Code. For patrons, we will be back with a special episode covering Infinite Quest.
Yes, we have a Patreon now, and I'm so excited to talk about it.
Yeah, so you can find us at patreon.com/wibblypod. Be there, be square. We have all sorts of fun things, so come be a wobbler. Is that what we decided on? A wibbler? A wobbler? A timey-wimer? we'll workshop it.
We'll workshop it. Maybe the audience can choose if they are a wibbler or a wobbler.
Are you a wibbler or wobbler? We'll make a poll.
See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this adventure with us through space and time.
You can find us elsewhere on the internet, on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram @WibblyPod. Follow us for more Wibbly Wobbly content.
You can find out more information about us and our content on wibblywobblytimeywimey.net and full transcripts for episodes at wibblywobblytimeywimey.net/transcripts.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can also send us an email at wibblywobblytimeywimeypod@gmail.com.
Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and other platforms, as it helps other people find us and our content.
If you'd like to support us, you can send us a donation at paypal.me/wibblypod.
Special thanks to our editor, Dee, who has been a vital member of the Wibbly Wobbly team.
That's all for now. Catch you in the time vortex.